Thanks, Blessing and Chonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, July 24th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Kip Stube.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Zimbabwe is admitting that it is facing challenges in fully implementing the staff monitored program that was approved by the International Monetary Fund in June 2013 to try and revive the country's ailing economy.
The challenge is that we now need real structural reform. For example, with respect to the way government expenditures are organized, we need to have a close relook at the way we do business.
Chronicle business editor Menat Mafirakureba died last night when a car he was traveling in was involved in an accident along the Maswingo Harare Highway.
I think this is really one of the sad things that has happened recently in the media, because I think he was one of the promising young men who was very quiet and doing a good job.
And Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition says it is planning to stage protests to express its dismay at what it calls government's failure to deal with mounting economic problems.
Zimbabwe is admitting that it is facing challenges in fully implementing the staff monitored program that was approved by the International Monetary Fund mismanagement in June 2013 to try and revive the country's ailing economy. The letter of intent to the IMF, co-authored by Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa and Central Bank Chief John Manguja, indicates that the country is struggling to revive the economy. The two admit that though some steps have been taken to implement the IMF recommendations, Harare is finding the going tough as a result of the non-performing economy.
Zimbabwe, though, says it has met two of the six quantitative targets, the floor on protected social spending and the floor on payments to the Poverty Reduction and Growth Trust. But the country admits it has failed to reduce its external debt, reduce the civil servants' bill, cut ballooning government expenditure, and fully bring clarity on the use of diamond revenue, among other reforms. Economist Godfrey Kanyenze, director of the Labour and Economist Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that Harare lacks the political will to address the economic crisis.
The challenge is that we now need real structural reform. For example, with respect to the way government expenditures are organized, we need to have a close relook at the way we do business. So far, we tend to follow this logic that there's a problem, we create a ministry. And to create the impression that it's a ministry that is supposed to deal with problems. For example, Ministry of SMEs, Ministry of Youth, Ministry of Women, and so forth. And most of them are doing similar things, overlapping things, trying to basically offer projects to their constituencies, for example, the youth. And these are not working. And we need a complete rethink in terms of the way government does business.
Americans, Dr. Kanyenze, will say it's the economy stupid. But what is Zimbabwe's problem? Is it the economy or is it lack of political will? Where is this the problem of failing to implement policies coming from?
The politics. If you look at the politics, besides that, we are still steeped in political imperatives. Basically, where we are actually promising people, populism is Indian. Promising people that we do this for them, we do that for them. I will pay them PGL wages, we'll create 2.2 million jobs. And yet we don't have the wherewithal to do that. You have highlighted one issue of political will. But the problem is not just political will. Right now, it's lack of cohesion, lack of unity, even within government. Let alone if you look at parliament now. Parliament is so splintered to the extent that you can't wait. MPC itself is splintered, ZANU-PF is splintered. You know, so you can't really talk of a cohesive parliament. And then that parliament is going to be a major role to play, especially aligning all the acts with the new constitution.
That was economist Godfrey Kanyenze, director of the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Chronically business editor Menard Mafira Kureba died last night when a car he was traveling in was involved in an accident along the Maswingo Harare Highway. Mafira Kureba's colleague, Sunday News senior business reporter Roberto Gatunga, escaped with some injuries and was admitted to a Harare hospital after their car collided with a bus. According to the police, the accident also claimed the life of one passenger in the bus, which was traveling to South Africa. Acting Chronicle business editor Innocent Matongo described Mafira Kureba as a hardworking, intelligent, and resourceful journalist.
His family members said they are still trying to establish the circumstances leading to the accident. His death follows that of freelance journalist Zacchaeus Nemadire, who died Tuesday outside his home in what police are treating as a murder case. Police spokesperson, Senior Assistant Commissioner Charity Charamba, said investigations in both cases are in progress. In a statement, the Zimbabwe Union of Journalists Secretary General Foster Dongozi said journalists and journalism had been dealt a severe blow as the two had died a few hours apart.
He said the double tragedy reinforces their call for the safety of journalists in the country. And Mr. Director Nhlanhla Ngwenya described the death of the two journalists as heartbreaking.
I think this is really one of the sad things that has happened recently in the media, because I think he was one of the promising young men who was very quiet and doing a good job. And I think, it's very unbelievable and really disheartening when we lose journalists like that. And also remember that today we were reading reports of another freelance journalist who was murdered in Harare. So this is, I think, one of the sad days in journalism where we lost two guys. And basically another person, one of the journalists from Beta, who is in the hospital, she broke her leg, just wishing a very speedy recovery.
How do you come in under such circumstances as MISA?
I'm not sure exactly what the association does, but I think there is the Union of Journalists, which normally will come in if the journalists were members of Zuch. But you always find that there is a lot of solidarity amongst the journalists when someone is passed on. But maybe when such incidents happen, it's time maybe also journalists looked at their welfare during their life and after those times.
Now, in terms of some of these road accidents, one that has actually claimed the life of Mafira Kureba, what does it mean to Zimbabwe, because the roads, are they good enough or there's something wrong somewhere?
I think the basically journalists are some of the people who have actually written in the past days. I mean, I still remember reading a story of seven members of the same family that died in the accident. But Zimbabwean roads are not safe. And we have seen civic society coming up with a campaign, paying dearly to die, saying even if we are paying for the toll gates, nothing is done to improve the safety on the road. And such cases keep on reminding us that the government is not doing enough to make sure that our roads are safe, to make sure that, people are free to drive around. Because I think one of Zimbabwe's roads are one of the best roads in Southern Africa, and I hope authorities will do a lot in terms of making sure that our roads are safe.
That was MISA Zimbabwe Director Nhlanhla Ngwenya speaking with Studio 7 from Harare.
A crisis in Zimbabwe coalition says it is planning to stage protests to express its dismay at what it is calling government's failure to deal with mounting economic problems. The organization, which is a group of civic entities, says it has also been egged by President Robert Mugabe's remarks last week that the economy is on a rebound despite mounting negative campaign fueled by the so-called country's detractors. Unemployment rate, according to unofficial statistics, is now soaring above 90%, with the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions claiming that over 300 workers were being retrenched every week. Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition spokesman Mfundo Mulilo tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that consultations are underway.
I think that the Crisis Coalition has a growing frustration with the manner in which the government of Zimbabwe continues to handle the situation in the country, primarily the economic situation. And because of that, we have ongoing discussions around the options on the table. And one of the options on the table is that we've begun mobilization of our own members as a means to respond to the continued lack of clarity on a response to the situation in the country by our government.
So mobilization has already started?
Yes, mobilization has already started because, as you know, Crisis Coalition is a membership-driven institution. It also includes organizations like the Combined Arab Association and other major institutions. And I can tell you that most of these institutions are slowly losing faith with the Nanish government. Has either produced policies and has either responded to many of the issues that we have put on the table. And one of the options that we are actively pursuing is the issue of going back to the issue of prayer rallies that you saw in 2007, which inadvertently led to the peace talks between the warring parties in government, because then the opposition and the government are not giving a very clear direction to the country. So we are going back to that scenario where we are abandoning our faith in putting things on the table to the government and also to the SADC, because there's very little that can come out from those discussions. And we are going back to Zimbabweans to say the solution to the Zimbabwe crisis perhaps may lie with the Zimbabwe people themselves.
That was Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition spokesman Mfundo Mlilo speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Some Zimbabwean HIV/AIDS activists and non-profit organizations that were not able to attend the 20th edition of the 2014 AIDS Conference in Melbourne, Australia, are calling on the donor community not to tire in supporting AIDS-related programs. The executive director of the Women and AIDS Support Network, Mary Sandasi, says most donors and governments are showing signs of donor fatigue in supporting AIDS programs, a situation she hopes will come under the spotlight at the conference in Melbourne. Sandasi says her organization is working with urban and rural communities in promoting the use of female condoms as a way of protecting women from HIV and sexually transmitted infections. Sandasi speaks to Studio 7's Marvelous Mklanganyawuye about this and related HIV/AIDS issues.
The things that we would want to see discussed at this conference are actually issues to do with funding for women's issues, especially sexual reproductive health and rights, and HIV and AIDS. We realize that HIV and AIDS is not being taken as a priority anymore because of other things that are happening. Yet, we know that some illnesses that are emerging now are doing so because the immunity systems of people are already compromised with HIV. So we still want to see HIV and AIDS given priority and given enough funding.
Are there any other methods that you're encouraging in the country at the moment that you have seen being successful in the fight against HIV and AIDS?
Yeah, we are still campaigning for the female condom to be used by women and girls as a preventive measure. We also want to see acceleration of microbicide research so that the women can choose to use a gadget that they control.
But what are the challenges that you're facing as an organization in trying to encourage women to use the female condom?
Women and girls are not in control of their sexuality. They don't choose when to have sex and who to have sex with. So there's need for them to get some skills in communication and assertiveness so that they could negotiate safer sex with their partners.
And how has the female condom actually been received from what you're seeing on the ground?
An organization like Women and AIDS that works with women and girls at community level, we have been taking the female condom to the communities and training the women on communication and assertiveness and how to insert the female condom. And they have actually taken it on board, and there are demands that are coming from these women for more female condoms. And the community like Bokwe, we actually have done the trainings and the women and the girls in that community demand for the female condoms. And at times, they actually just phone our organization that they want more female condoms. And all we do is take the female condoms to the bus and then they pick them up at the other end.
That was the executive director of the Women and AIDS Support Network, Mary Sandasi, speaking to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyawe from Melbourne, Australia.
You talked, we listened. By popular demand, Studio 7 Live Talk is launching our very own Women's Roundtable starting Thursday, July 16. This show seeks to address issues of concern to us as women. Tell us what you want us to discuss via email at studio7@voanews.com. The address again, studio7@voanews.com, or on WhatsApp 1-202-465-0318. The number again, 1-202-465-0318. And of course, on our Studio 7 Facebook page.
Coming up,
a closer look at Zimra and moves to tax vendors. Stay tuned.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Air Algeria says authorities continue looking for flight AH5017, which vanished from Rata somewhere over northern Mali, on its way from Burkina Faso to Algiers. There's been no contact with the plane carrying 116 passengers and crew since early Thursday morning on what should have been a four-hour flight.
The transportation of human remains continues from last week's shutdown of Malaysia Airlines flight MH17 from Ukraine to the Netherlands. 193 of the 298 people killed were Dutch. Tens of thousands of mourners in the Netherlands held memorial services and ceremonies as the first bodies from flight MH17 arrived in the country on Wednesday.
Israeli strikes in Gaza continued Thursday, and rockets fired by Hamas-led fighters in the enclave landed in Israel as both sides maintained their condition for a ceasefire. VOA Scott Bob reports that the number of Palestinians killed in the conflict surpassed 700, while the death toll in Israel rose to 35.
And the Taiwanese authorities have identified 31 people killed when a domestic flight crashed during poor weather on Wednesday. Another 17 bodies remain unidentified. Investigator Wang Qingzhong said officials are looking at flight data and recordings from the recovered black boxes to determine why the TransAsia Airways plane crashed near Magong Airport on the island of Penghu.
Despite major medical advances in treating AIDS, one powerful force stands in the way of treatment for many afflicted with the disease, and that is stigma. A special Voice of America documentary, Living in the Shadows, pulled back the curtain on this challenge in the fight against AIDS. VOA's Anita Powell attended the screening, and she brings us this report from the 20th International AIDS Conference in Melbourne, Australia.
Stigma has stuck to AIDS from the very start. When the virus first began to emerge in the 1980s, it cut a wide swath through two groups that have historically faced their own stigma, gay men and intravenous drug users. More than 30 years later, however, the face of AIDS has changed. Today's new HIV patient is statistically likely to be a heterosexual African woman. But as VOA's new documentary, Living in the Shadows, shows, as the reach of AIDS has expanded, stigma remains and seems as stubborn as this highly adaptable virus. AIDS stigma remains from Cambodia to Nigeria to Uganda. It even persists in 2014 in developed nations like the U.S. and Canada, says immunologist Dr. Anthony Fauci, who is director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Fauci noted the powerful role of stigma in discussing the famous recent case of the Mississippi baby, a baby born with HIV contracted from her mother, then treated aggressively and put in remission for just over 2 years before again showing signs of infection. The baby's mother, he said, did not get prenatal care that would have identified her HIV status and protected the baby from contracting the virus. That failure to get care, he said, is often a consequence of stigma.
In the United States, a developed nation, there is still, as shown on the film, even in the city that I live in, considerable stigma associated with it, some of which is very subtle, that prevents people from getting into the appropriate care at the appropriate time. So there's a lot of implications of that.
In Nigeria, where it's against the law to be gay, gay rights activist Afani Kelly Orazulike painted a dark picture of the stigma around AIDS and homosexuality.
It's incredibly amazing how we have lived through the work that we do in Nigeria and how we have been able to survive in terms of ensuring that people have access to healthcare services and access to social justice, because living by the day gets more scarier.
And AIDS stigma affects not just patients, but their providers as well. Dr. Julio Montaner has worked in the field for decades and says that stigma could be holding back important advances. He described, for example, his struggles in getting government approval to set up a safe needle exchange site for drug users in Vancouver, Canada.
Yet we suffer a stigma by association. And, you know, I don't see too many times when my friend, who is a cardiologist, gets asked, why do you do this work? What motivates you to do this work? Why are you so passionate about it? I mean, people accept that being a cardiologist, you're supposed to be passionate about cardiac disease. But we get asked that all the time. You know, how the hell do you care about people who use drugs? And, you know, and this and that and the other thing.
Montaner does not offer an answer to that question. Why, he said, should he have to explain himself any more than any other doctor treating any other disease? That's one of the many questions that haunts this deadly virus and continues to plague the fight against AIDS. Anita Powell, VOA News, Melbourne, Australia.
The move by the Zimbabwe Revenue Authority, or ZIMRA, to compel vendors and informal merchants to pay tax in a desperate maneuver to raise cash for the government has angered many local people. ZIMRA has been doing the rounds in the country, ordering informal traders to register so they can start paying tax. Sources say today ZIMRA officials visited markets in Bulawayo and a flea market in Kariba. The law defines an informal trader as an individual who carries on a trade of his own account in which he derives a gross income of less than $6,000 annually. But vendors say, though they are open to pay taxes, the structures under which ZIMRA wants to begin collecting them are not correct. For perspective on the issue, reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke to analyst and ZANU-PF member Gadzira Chirumanzu and Wisborne Malaya, Secretary General of the Zimbabwe Chamber of Informal Economy Associations. Malaya says his organization is against moves by ZIMRA to tax informal workers.
We feel it's a harsh move to the vendors, to the informal traders. There should be a better way of approaching this situation if ZIMRA wants to collect tax from the vendors. So them just descending on them on the area they are trading without any system, to us, we feel it's a very harsh condition, which we have felt is based on desperation.
Mr. Chirimanzu, what's your reaction as we look at ZIMRA, which is moving to tax those in the informal sector?
Well, I think it is a big and a bold and a very strategic move because, you know, at the end of the day, every Zimbabwean is to own up to any business venture which he is doing in form of paying tax.
But how will the government be able to do such a thing? Is it possible, realistically, to be able to tax a majority of Zimbabweans who are in the informal sector?
It is very possible. Every Zimbabwean today, you find that he or she has got a birth certificate, he or she has got an identity document. If the government can be in a position to do such a mammoth task, honestly, I think it would be a stroll in the park for them to come up with the statistics for the informal sector.
Mr. Amalaya, your organization has complained, of course, that the government is somewhat bulldozing with this move. What's your view on that, and have you been able to deal with the stakeholders on this issue?
Actually, we have written a press statement in line with that. As an organization, we are not against the issue of vendors paying tax, but we are against the system being applied. You know, we feel it's not a proper system. There should be a better system to put this to order, because as an organization, we also are endeavoring that these vendors, these informal traders, they may be part of the mainstream economy, which is being recognized by the fiscals of the country, being part of the system of every, be it the social and economic issues of the country. The government of Zimbabwe, as much as they are now speaking in papers, recognizing the informal sector, but the recognition is not in full because there are a lot of harassment, there are a lot of abuses taking place in the informal sector from the authorities, be it the local authorities and the police.
Mr. Chirimanzu, your response on that issue, that Zimra itself might be pushing too quickly to move to take taxes from vendors?
No. You see, that's not the issue. You know, every organization or department of the government, you know, has got to do its job. I mean, it's an obvious issue that there are so many people doing business in Zimbabwe, but whatever they are doing is not accountable. But now there is an army for the government that looks into that situation. And in this case, it is Zimra, right? And remember, Zimra is only dealing with the tax. But then the municipality will also deal with the, you know, regularization of who is where, selling what, and so forth.
Mr. Malaya, as Mr. Chirimanzu's pointing out, this, of course, is somewhat of a ladder. Are your members in your organization paying taxes at local level?
Members of our organization, yes, they are, to some extent, depending with the type of trade where they are trading from, they pay tax. If we talk of cross borders, they pay tax at the border post. If we talk of some who are operating within regulated environments, they pay tax as well, due to the local authorities. So they pay tax in a way. But there are those who are also trading in the streets. They moved to trade in the streets because of the surrounding environment. They are trying to earn a living. There are no jobs. Our members, they pay tax, but the way Zimra wants this tax to be done, that can also be practical in the informal sector, only condition that there is a smart regulatory framework which has been put in place to harness the environment, whereby we say the operations of these traders, the way they do their business, is also respected. They are also protected by the laws of the country, because you can't expect to take tax from somebody you are harassing today. You can't expect to take tax from somebody you are abusing tomorrow.
Mr. Chirimanzu, it is clear that revenue is needed in Zimbabwe. What is the way forward and how can this be done?
I think it's a question of all the stakeholders to sit down and come up with an agreement of how to conduct that type of business and also how to pay taxes and so forth. I think the parameters will be set if they agree that is according to the law.
Coming to you, Mr. Amalaya, what is the way forward when you look at this problem of Zimra moving to tax vendors?
The way forward, I think we are going to seriously engage with the Minister of Finance and Zimra and other stakeholders so that we have a stakeholder symposium where we discuss these issues in the aligned areas and highlight and also put order area, certain sections. Then from there, you can start to see how best these people can contribute to the fiscus of the country.
That was Wisbon Malaya, Secretary of the Zimbabwe Chamber of Informal Economy Associations. You also heard from social commentator and ZANU-PF member Gadzira Chirumanzu.
In our mailbag today, Grandma Manyuke writes, "I wish to thank you for the great job you are doing. If possible, can you please give us weather reports so that we'll have a bit of knowledge about our local environment on a daily basis?"
And Bim Lambo says, "I wish to thank you for giving us news every day."
Thanks very much, Grandma Nyumanyuke and Bim Lambo.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our women roundtable hosts will be talking with listeners and experts about the impact of HIV/AIDS on women.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so I can call you back from our studios.
And now to recap today's top stories.
Zimbabwe is admitting that it is facing challenges in fully implementing the staff monitored program that was approved by the IMF in June 2013.
A Chronicle business editor, Menat Mafirakureva, died last night when a car he was traveling in was involved in an accident along the Mashingo Harare Highway.
And Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition says it is planning to stage protests to express its dismay at what it is calling government's failure to deal with mounting economic problems.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And I'm Kip Stube, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.